We are waiting in a big, dark room, holding our breath to see the patterns of fungi unfold. They are everywhere, filtering the ground we live upon in symbiosis with the nature we live off. They are the oldest and largest living creatures, but still unknown and invisible. They were here long before us and will be here long after we were doomed. They are the undershattering basis of our existence. Fungi, we live in your mycelium web of holes. You make our perception of reality crumble. Bit by bit, it falls apart, and a new pattern becomes visible.
These are all my favorite things. There's music, there's cocktails, there's science, there's fungi. Okay, my kids aren't gonna believe it, so I'm just gonna take a picture. Can you wave for a second? So good, okay. Hi, I'm Toby. This is great. I'm really looking forward to the next. And I wanna start with a quote. And this is important, actually, to the whole talk. So we really have to remember that what we observe is not nature itself, but nature exposed to our method of questioning. There's a question that we ask ourselves all the time, and that's, what is it like to be fungal? Because like fungi, they break all the categories, they break all the rules, and that's what sort of makes it so interesting to study them, is like, we just want to know what it's like to be you, right? To be a fungus. And so we've worked really hard to design tools to get at the inner lives of organisms that we can't ask direct questions to.
In this episode of the Science and Cocktail podcast, we'll unfold the underground fungal network. I'm Sophie Hjort, and I'll be your host. And our guide into this magical network is Toby Kears.
And so this is how I see the world. It's beautiful and it's totally fungal. And there's two things I really want to do today as we move through this. I want you to change your opinion about fungi. They are capable of so much more than we thought. They are not passive accessories to plants. They're not the internet of plants. They are powerful actors. We have totally underestimated fungi.
And what a guide. Not only is she a professor of evolutionary biology, she is also the executive director of the Society for the Protection of Underground Networks. So we will be in the best hands.
Welcome to the Science and Cocktails podcast.
Get on your spaceship.
Interesting.
And now the machine is working.
Increase the frequency of lucid dreams in our laboratories.
Over time, the variation within a group becomes variation between groups.
It has to do with particles or objects and how they move.
Am I true? Am I real?
We think that there is a kind of God against it.
What are the processes behind?
It's a piece of stuff.
We are moving in space-time. Go like 1 second per second, flowing up in the fourth dimension.
We have to be a little bit closer.
Yeah.
This is good. This is very good.
In addition to experiencing her amazing talk at the Science and Cocktails in Copenhagen, I had the great pleasure of meeting her in person in her room at her hotel in Copenhagen.
How did you get interested in this underground world?
My interest goes all the way back to when I was 19, and I left university. I decided I wanted to be a field biologist and I didn't need to sit in classrooms anymore. And I traveled to the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute, which is in Panama. And I lived for a year on this very small island called Barro Colorado Island, and worked with some of the best field biologists on Earth. And everybody there was very interested in all this diversity above ground, right? You can imagine these are tropical forests that just host some of the most incredibly diverse ecosystems on Earth, all full of animals and plants. And one of the big questions I had as I walked through these ecosystems was like, well, is it the same below ground, right? Are there similar high levels of diversity? And what is it about these soils that produce such incredible array of organisms? And so that was the start of a very long career that has been focused pretty much strictly on mycorrhizal fungi and what's happening below ground, and just trying to kind of undo that above ground bias and just say, even though we can't see what's happening below ground, there's so much importance. And so trying to draw attention to these underground ecosystems has been a many decades of research.
More than half of the organisms, these species, they live underground. But it's been totally invisible. And like, my job is to change that. What a fun job to be able to change that and have people start caring about what's happening underground. They are so much more capable of anything we thought they could do back in the 1950s. Their capabilities, their contributions. So I want that shift. I want you to feel that shift. You see them in a totally different light. But I also want you to understand that, like, if we understand fungi, we can change a lot of things about the world. They really impact climate. We're going to talk about that. How we restore degraded ecosystems, how we can leverage fungi to really restore some of our worst degraded habitats, how we do conservation, how we pick where to conserve habitat, and then, of course, in agriculture, and how we use them in sustainable farming. So imagine this is a network, right?
Can you describe what is this hidden fungal network, if you should describe what it looks like?
So underground is one of Earth's sort of most important circulatory systems, and that's these fungi that we call mycorrhizal fungi. And they form beautiful complex networks underground that are attached to plant roots. And it's a very important symbiosis that basically underlies life on Earth, because the plants, they're photosynthesizing and they're taking carbon out of the atmosphere. And then they bring that carbon all the way down to their root systems and they feed these fungal networks. And in return, the fungi forage out in the soil and they provide phosphorus and nitrogen and water to the plant roots. And so it's this partnership that evolved some 450 million years ago and really underlies the productivity and the health and the resilience of ecosystems today.
So underground, there is this constant process going on, a symbiotic exchange of resources between plants and fungi.
If you were to put a periscope into the underground, you would see the most crazy dynamics. You know, even just centimeters apart, a soil system could be as different as a rainforest and a desert, because these are really complex and very spatially heterogeneous ecosystems. And so there's just so much going on below ground if we could only see it. So I think we need like a James Webb telescope for the underground, right? Something that really allows us to ask the kinds of questions that we have been asking above ground.
The fungi is made of long, thin filaments called mycelium. You can say it becomes an extension of the plant's root. helping the plant to absorb water and minerals from the soil. And in turn, the plant shares carbon hydrates.
This symbiosis really does underlie life on Earth. So the productivity of ecosystems and their health and their resilience really depends on the health of what's happening below ground. They are important regulators of climate. We know that plants send about 13 billion tons of CO2 down into fungal networks every year.
Not only does this symbiosis benefit both plants and fungi, it benefits the whole planet by absorbing carbon from the atmosphere.
And so we want to understand that movement of carbon. So we recently looked and harmonized all the studies that had ever been done where scientists tagged carbon and then tried to quantify how much of that carbon was moving from CO2 down into the bodies of these fungi. And it's a big number. It's really big. It even surprised us. So 13 billion tons of CO2 every year are processed by plants and then fed down to these fungal networks. So that's equivalent to like a third of emissions from fossil fuels that the plants are moving and then down into the fungal network.
One third of the CO2 emission from human activities are stored underground through this symbiosis between plants and fungal networks. That's a huge amount.
So these fungi, even though they're below ground, they're helping regulate the climate above ground by taking that carbon and putting it into their network, but also making these beautiful complex compounds that are very hard to degrade. And so if you have fungal-derived carbon, it stays below ground longer, and that can really help keep the carbon below ground rather than the atmosphere.
We'll get back to how these fungal networks benefits the global climate and biodiversity. But first, we'll look deeper into the structures of those networks to get a visual impression of what they look like and what they're capable of.
So just imagine going deep into this network. And you have to imagine these tubes, they are translucent. You can see through them. And we've developed these imaging tools to actually study the patterns inside these networks. And what we've seen over the last 2 years has totally blown our minds. So this is what you're watching right now. This is a flow of resources in a living mycorrhizal network. And this is in real time, right? This isn't sped up. This is what's happening under our feet right now. They make these very complex and beautiful flows. And there's something I want you to notice about this video, is that in certain points of the video, you start to see not only did the flows change directions,
so Toby is showing a video on the big screen, and it looks like rivers with small particles flowing in different directions. And sometimes you'll see that the particles moves in both directions at the same time.
Like imagine a river, right, that is flowing both north and south in the same river.
Plant or animal? Is it something in between?
Yeah, so fungi are neither plant nor animal, but they have a whole kingdom of their own, and that's the fungal kingdom. And there's many ways to be a fungus, and in this case, this is a very ancient partnership between plants and fungi. And these fungi, they form, their bodies are network forming, and so you can think of that as sort of beautiful, delicate highways that are underground that are even thinner than a piece of hair on your head, for example. So just about 10 microns across. And inside these, especially with the type that we study, are beautiful, complex flows of nutrients and water and carbon. And we have developed techniques that actually allow us to make those invisible flows and processes visible. And we can start to really unpack what's happening underground.
Okay, I'm gonna get back to that in 2 seconds. I just want to ask you, like, how big can one fungi be? Like, how big can the network spread?
People ask the question, how big can these networks be? And actually, it's quite a hard question for science, because the way that fungi work, they sort of throw our understanding of what an individual is out the window. It's very hard to understand what is an individual fungus, because oftentimes they can have even multiple genomes in a single network. And so it's quite hard to understand what is a fungus. So the question that could be a very easy question, how big are these fungi? We still don't really know.
Okay, so you don't know when it's one individual or it's plural individuals, where the line is between the individuals, or?
Exactly. So when you have a community of fungi, sometimes they're not very closely related, and then we can tell, okay, that's one type of fungus and this is another. But when they're closely related, they can fuse together and they can share genetic material. And those fusions make it very hard to understand what is an individual. And so you kind of, it's an interesting question, because they sort of break categorization. And that's what makes them really interesting to work with, because on the one hand, you think, oh, that should be very easy to be able to say this is what an individual is. But actually, it's, it almost becomes a philosophical question.
Okay. Do you know anything about how old an individual can be?
There are certain fungi that can be old. Again, it's a really hard question for scientists, because all of this is happening underground. And so you ask these questions that seem like they'd be quite easy to answer, but actually they're very, very difficult to understand, ages of fungi, because they're constantly remodeling their bodies. So it's very different from our bodies, which is quite determinate. You are born and you grow up to a certain age and then you die. These are indeterminate organisms, so they're always branching and fusing and making new parts of their bodies. So it's really hard to also put an age on mycorrhizal fungi.
So fungi underground totally breaks the boundaries between individuals and communities, between age and physical limits. And most plants have symbiosis with underground fungi, which makes plants thrive in even the hardest environments. We will now dive into how fungi is essential for biodiversity in environments all over the world, and how they are suffering due to extended monoculture and increasing nitrogen from human activities.
All kinds of organisms use the fungi for food and for transport. They can actually catch rides on these highways and move really fast. We call it the fungal fast lane, where these bacteria can actually get onto a network and travel.
In this complex ecosystem underground, bacteria are essential players. By decomposing organic matter and thereby releasing nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus, and transforming them into forms that plants and fungi can absorb.
So the fungi themselves have their own microbiome that they support. So it's really complex food webs underground. And we know that fungi help with productivity of above ground ecosystems, and in some cases actually mediate biodiversity above ground. So many plants survive in places that they couldn't normally survive by making partnerships with the fungi. And so all that biodiversity, all that innovation that's being generated above ground relies on these fungal connections below ground. And so what we really are trying to do is draw more attention to the underground and say that we need to protect these ecosystems in the same way that we pay attention and manage above ground ecosystems.
And what do we need to do to protect them?
Well, we first have to know where the biodiversity hotspots are of these fungal networks. We know that communities are not spread evenly across the earth. And so together with SPUN, we work with local collaborators across the world to actually map the diversity patterns of these fungal communities. And we do this in some of the most remote, hard to access ecosystems on Earth.
This is beautiful. This is Palmyra Atoll, which is the most remote island on Earth. It's really hard to get to. It's only a scientific research station. But why it's so fascinating is that these rainforest plants are able to survive on very nutrient-poor corals. And the only nutrient input is these massive bird populations that come to these islands. And the guano is toxic to many organisms, except these fungi that allow these plants to survive. So we go there with the Nature Conservancy, and we're trying to figure out how to use fungi to repopulate this atoll with original rainforest ecosystems. This is a shot from Lesotho, which is a high-altitude country in the middle of South Africa. These ecosystems, they have these high-altitude wetlands that store extraordinary amounts of carbon. Not a lot of above-ground tree cover, because it's really high-altitude country, but so much carbon below ground. This is a video from Kazakhstan, where we've been sampling what are called old-growth grasslands. I think people understand, you know, what an old-growth forest looks like, but some of these grasslands in Kazakhstan have old-growth grasslands with roots that go meters, you know, meters down. We want to understand, what does a pristine grassland look like? We recently got back from an expedition to Mongolia, to the Gobi Desert, where, like, desertification, right? It's real and it's happening and it's moving north. And again, these are incredible ecosystems that house very endemic species.
Are there some ecosystems that we know about above ground that's more dependent on the underground ecosystems than others?
That's a great question. Yes, there are some ecosystems that we know fungi are really important, and some of them are quite surprising. So desert ecosystems, for example, you think, oh, that doesn't really have to do with fungi, right? We think about fungi in sort of moist, cold forests. But desert plants really depend on these fungal networks, not only for their nutrients, but also for their water uptake. And so when we go to desert ecosystems, we tend to find different, very unique communities of fungi that we call endemic fungi that are very unique to that one place, that are very rare. And those are really important in sort of our understanding of the library of solutions that fungi have evolved over these hundreds of millions of years. And in those cases, those fungi are really important for maintaining water relations. There's also some surprising patterns. For example, if we think of the tundra or the tiga up north, where we have really low diversity above ground, maybe just a couple dozen plant species. But below ground, these are some of the richest habitats for fungal diversity. And so you can have just hundreds of species below ground when you just have a few plant species above ground. And so there's this mismatch in biodiversity.
In general, like now due to climate crisis and biodiversity crisis, what is the general state of the fungal networks today?
We're worried about fungi underground and these mycorrhizal networks in particular, because they really are one of Earth's most important circulatory systems, both for climate regulation and nutrients and water and maintenance of biodiversity. But there are places where we're worried that they're disappearing. So the main drivers of loss of these networks is land conversion. For example, if you were to convert land from a forest into housing development or concrete, all of those things are very bad for mycorrhizal networks. They need plants to survive. So when we cover the underground ecosystems with concrete, they tend to disappear. We're also worried about nutrient dynamics. So more and more there's nitrogen in the rainwater, and we're really facing what we call a eutrophication crisis, where there's just a lot of nutrients that are being added to the soil, both through fertilizer and unintended consequences. Now, the problem is that if you have all of this fertilizer and nutrients entering the system, that partnership between plants and fungi breaks down, because plants can access those nutrients directly from the soil system, so they don't need the partnership anymore. But if you break down that partnership, then all of a sudden that pump that is bringing carbon below ground is lost. And so that means that the atmosphere will continue to warm, because there's all the carbon staying in the atmosphere, not going below ground. And so that's something we're very worried about. Even in places that seem pristine, let's say some of these northern forests, there's still so much nitrogen in the rainwater that many of these fungal communities are disappearing. High-intensive agriculture is hard on fungal networks. Repeated tillage, again, lots of fertilizer, fungicide, right? Fungicides are designed to kill fungi, and so when you add those to soil, these networks disappear. Breeding has also been very hard. Crops used to depend, our early ancestors of crops used to really depend on networks for their nutrients, but through breeding processes, they have lessened that dependence. And so again, they need more fertilizer, they're not putting as much carbon below ground. And so one of our big questions is, how can we increase that reliance on fungi in crop systems so that we keep that underground circulatory system alive?
Okay, I will just turn down the violins and try to sum up some of the worries Toby has. So one thing is that as well as plants need fungi to thrive, the fungi needs plants as well. So when you remove a forest and build a city, you'll remove all the vegetation above ground, and the symbiosis will break, and the fungi below ground will die. And then essential to this symbiosis is that the fungi will help the plants uptake fertilizer like nitrogen. But nitrogen is increasing all over this planet. It comes from agriculture, wastewater, and different kinds of industries. And that means that the plants don't need the symbiosis anymore, and they will let go. And again, the fungi die. And on the top of that, fungicide is used in agriculture to kill fungi. And then this whole breeding process, where the crops in agriculture has been breeded for generations to get more and more dependent on fertilizer and less dependent on the fungi.
One of our big questions is, how can we increase that reliance on fungi in crop systems so that we keep that underground circulatory system alive?
So could that be going back to some of the species that we used to grow?
Yeah, you mean going back to some of the crop species?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a whole field that's looking at ancestral microbiomes and going back to centers of origins of plants and trying to understand what microbial communities are on their root microbiome and if they interact with different communities in these centers of origin. So that's a major push for scientists right now, is not only to understand these ancestors of our crops, but also understand the microbiome of the ancestors of our crops. I would also add that in agriculture, we're also having a bit of a pollinator crisis, right? So bee populations are disappearing. But when plants interact with mycorrhizal fungi, that tends to allow them to make bigger, sweeter flowers. And so you see these kinds of interactions now, where if you really support fungal communities, it's not just about below ground health, but it's also helping the health of all of these organisms above ground, like our pollinator populations.
Okay, so this symbiosis between the fungi and the plants makes the plants produce bigger and sweeter flowers, and thereby supporting the pollinators like the bees. This is really one of these things that really show the unlimited intelligence of nature. It even makes me think that maybe there is a God somewhere controlling these things. But again, then comes humans, this innovative species that seems to destroy all these beautiful, intelligent creatures that makes this planet so special. Okay, I will stop this philosophical track and go back to something more scientific, which is, how is it possible to study those fungi communities underground, which are so delicate and sensitive?
They're exquisitely sensitive to their environment. And so if we're working in the lab and we even sort of lean down and just breathe on the organisms, talk to them, it changes their flow pattern. So they're so responsive to the outside environment that it's endlessly fascinating.
But Toby and her colleagues have actually found a solution to this problem. They have now a robot which are handling all the fungi samples in the lab so that no human person will go near them, not even in the room. So you're literally standing outside a closed door while a robot arm is taking care of all your fungi specimens.
We like get people excited, we're like, oh, you want to see the robot? We're like, come to Amsterdam, come see the robot. And then you stand outside it and it's just this digital twin. So you're watching the robot, but you can't actually see it. But we're like, no, we promise it's not like a TV show. Like, it's actually in there, but it's hidden.
Not only are fungi not plants, not animals, but its own kingdom, they also challenge the boundaries between individuals and community, age and physical boundaries. So how is it possible to study and learn about these highly sensitive, invisible, underground fungal networks?
One of the techniques that we have is to bring some of these fungal strains into the lab and actually grow them on root systems that we propagate in petri plates. So we're able to take a plant root system and grow it on one half of the plate, and then we inoculate it with a fungi. And it forms this partnership, this trade symbiosis, and then we let the fungi grow into what we call the fungal arena. And that's where we start to study these dynamics. And we've developed, together with AMOF, which is a biophysics institute in Amsterdam, ways of actually imaging these networks across time using robots that allow us to stitch together many high-resolution images so that we can follow how the network forms these beautiful highways and then actually zoom in even closer and study the nutrient flows, which are almost like the traffic systems inside the fungi.
The underground fungal network makes biodiversity bloom in the most difficult places, like the tundra up north, where there's cold and there's times of the year with almost no sun. But in those places, the plants can grow because of this underground biodiversity the fungi creates.
And I think one of the biggest questions we have right now is, now that we have the setup, is, you know, how are they going to react to climate change? And can we simulate that in the lab? What happens if we increase temperatures? Does that change the way they're moving nutrients and carbon? What if we increase disturbance and really, you know, slash them and see how they reconfigure their networks? What if we add too much nutrients? All of these things that we can now simulate in the lab are going to provide really important data for how the networks are going to respond to climate change.
Okay, and it matters. This is the part of the talk where we're like, yeah, this really matters. because I'm worried, right? Like, it's not going great in terms of soil health. We're losing tons of soil. I mean, this number is a big one. The UN predicts 90% will be degraded in some form by 2050. This is millions of years, hundreds of millions of years of evolution that could be lost if we don't protect underground ecosystems. And so a big move has been to say, okay, like, how do we flip people's attention a bit? How do we make them start caring about these organisms the way that we care about other organisms above ground?
This will be the last words of today. I hope that this podcast has flipped your attention a bit to how important and amazing this underground world of fungi is, and how important it is to protect it for both biodiversity and global climate. This podcast is supported by the Novo Nordisk Foundation. It's written and produced by me, Sophie Hjort, for the Science and Cocktails organization. And the jingle and all the other music of this podcast is composed by Hjalte Bistel Hjort.